Are you crazy about Chihuahuas? Maybe you're wondering if a Chihuahua is the right dog for you. Perhaps you have a training or behavior struggle. Well, look no further. Here you will find expert opinions, honest views, training and behavior advice, and much more on the Chihuahua Podcast. And now, allow me to welcome your hosts, Kate Masterton and Haley Miles. Over to you, ladies.
Welcome back. To the Chihuahua Podcast.
Yay, we're back. We're back for our kind of second, I guess, this is our second season, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We're nearly at our year anniversary, 29th of November.
It's our birthday next month.
It is?
Our birthday next month. We were just thinking about, we're just trying to remember actually what the date was, and I think it was the 29th of November, our first episode aired. So there we are.
Done really well, hasn't it?
I'm really proud.
Nice little community of podcast listeners as well.
We have, and we haven't been around for a while, but it keeps growing, which is amazing. So thank you everyone for continuing to listen and subscribe and whatnot. So we're really, really grateful. And today we're going to kick it off with Kate. Do you want to tell us what we're going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the five freedoms of animal welfare and meeting your dog's needs. And how we came up with this topic, we talk about cases and things and dog behaviours and problems that people are having with their dogs, and we always come back to, what do we come back to, Hayley?
Is the dog's needs being met, first and foremost? Meet your dog's needs first.
Yeah, it always comes back to the dog's needs aren't being met, or, well, a lot of the time that is what that comes, it comes back to, doesn't it? The dog's needs aren't being met. And I said this to one of my friends that's not a dog trainer, because I have those non-dog trainers.
What?
I know. And she said, but what does that mean? What does meeting their needs mean? And I thought that's actually a really good question and would make a really good episode for the podcast.
Yeah. So here we are.
Here we are.
So we're excited to talk about this, because it is really important. Sometimes if you have an issue going on with your dog, with your chihuahua, and you think it's a behavior issue, simply going back to basics and thinking to yourself, is my dog's needs being met, can actually resolve that behavior issue. So, but it's difficult, isn't it? Because some people don't know what the needs are. Like, what does that mean? What does meeting my dog's needs mean? And we're going to kind of deep dive into that today, aren't we?
We are, exactly. So we're going to start off by discussing the five freedoms. And what are the five freedoms? So the five freedoms was the first widely accepted evidence-based framework to capture the key aspects of animal welfare in one model. The starting point for the five freedoms was a 1965 British parliamentary inquiry into the welfare of animals in intensive livestock production. So it was initially created to look at farming, animals in farming. Mm-hmm. A few years later, in 1979, at the instigation of Professor John Webster, the UK Farm Animal Advisory Committee, which was later named the Farm Animal Welfare Council, extended this concept to encompass both physical and mental needs of animals, such as avoiding fear and distress and being able to express normal behavior. What emerged were five separate freedoms, which together provided a simple yet holistic way of considering an animal's welfare state. The inclusion of psychological needs was a significant step forward in acknowledging animal sentience. Now, before I continue, the five freedoms are: freedom from hunger and thirst, freedom from discomfort, freedom from pain, injury, or disease, freedom to express normal behavior, freedom from fear and distress. The five freedoms have been extremely influential in shaping the development of evidence-based animal welfare standards. However, in recent years, animal welfare thinking has moved on from the concept of simply meeting the basic needs of an animal to recognizing their emotional needs and encouraging positive experiences. We now know that animals need more than just minimizing negative states for them to have a good quality of life.
And that is really, really important. It's not just about the physical needs now. Now we're talking about the emotional needs of this animal. So in 1994, Professor David Meller and Dr. Cam Reed propose a new model as a means of systematically identifying and grading the severity of animal welfare compromise by reformulating the five freedoms as five domains. These five domains are nutrition, environment, health, behavior, and mental state slash experiences. Five domains explore the mental state of an animal in more detail and acknowledge that for every physical aspect that is affected, there may be an accompanying emotion or subjective experience that may also affect welfare. One of the most important strengths of the five domains is the clarity it provides that merely minimizing or resolving negative physical or mental states does not necessarily result in positive welfare, but may only provide at best a neutral state. To help ensure animals have a good life, in quotation marks, they must have the opportunity to have positive experiences such as anticipation, satisfaction and satiation. To enable this, those responsible for the care of animals need to provide them with environments that not only allow but encourage animals to express behaviors that are rewarding. This shift in understanding is the basis for the five domains model incorporating positive animal welfare states. The five domains also allows us to extend our thinking beyond the five freedoms to place even greater emphasis on providing opportunities for animals to be exposed to or engage in activities which provide positive experiences.
So, yeah, so with the evolution of the five domains from the five freedoms, it really is acknowledging animals as sentient beings that have more than just basic needs. More than just, you know, food, water, shelter, exercise. So let's get into it.
Yeah, these are animals that are, yeah, these are animals that, you know, have emotions. They feel not all of the emotions that we feel possibly, but very, you know, very similar in some ways. They feel fear, anxiety, frustration, and, you know, they do feel. These are feeling, living, breathing, feeling animals, and I think that's what this recognizes and kind of
and how that feeds into their need. When we talk about their needs not being met, we're not just talking about their basic needs, their emotional needs.
No, that's going to really focus on today is the emotional side of things, I think, aren't we, Kate?
Yeah, we are.
Because we all know we should be giving our dogs food. We should be feeding our dogs and giving them water, you know, and maybe a nice bed. But it goes beyond that today.
Yeah, exactly. But we will touch on the first freedom / domain, which
they are important.
yeah, which is freedom from hunger and thirst / nutrition. So the domain being nutrition. But we're not going to go into massive detail on that because we actually have a whole episode all about canine nutrition with Alyssa Ralph. So if you haven't listened to that one and you want to know more about nutrition, do go back and listen to that one.
And that is a fantastic episode. It contains anything you want to know about feeding, what foods to feed, nutrition and any of the questions that you have around feeding, like why does my dog eat grass? How can I stop my dog eating poop? All that sort of stuff is on that episode. It's just fantastic. There's a wealth of information on there.
And it also covers as well the impacts of behavior and nutrition as well and how they're connected.
Yes. So yeah, it does. Yeah.
So then the next freedom.
Freedom from discomfort. So what do we mean by that? Do you think?
Is the environment a suitable environment for the dog? For example, is it really noisy in a dog that's, you know, quite a, you know, a nervous dog? That wouldn't be a suitable, that environment would be causing discomfort to the dog.
Yes.
Does the dog have a safe space they can go and sleep in? You know, does it have its own space? Is the environment conducive to the dog's well-being?
Yeah. Is the something like, you know, is your dog's food mat where it has its meals and the time at which your dog is being fed? Are there is there a lot of human traffic? You know, can your dog eat in peace? Does that make sense? So if you're feeding your dog in the kitchen at 5 p.m., but you've got all the kids wandering around and running past, that's not a nice environment to eat your dinner. So I think that something like that would really come down to that sort of discomfort. would you say?
Because we're not just talking about physical discomfort, are we? I would include, personally, I'd include mental stress as discomfort. Yeah. But on a basic needs level, freedom from discomfort should include, you know, somewhere comfy to sleep that's quiet as well.
Your dog, your chihuahua, should be able at any time in the day or at night to be able to go off somewhere that they choose and into a safe space. You know, somewhere to retreat to, so like a den or a safe space or their own bed, away from everyone, away from the, you know, hustle and bustle of the house, of the household. That really should be available to them at all times.
They should also be able to move out of circumstances. They should have freedom of choice to move.
Agency. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not be forced to have to be in a certain, like, to interact if they don't want to interact.
Now, this is a big one. Now we're moving into real important stuff here.
I know.
Oh my goodness, where'd we start with this one?
would you put that into the freedom for discomfort?
I would say,
or actually, it also fits into fear and distress, mental state and experience.
Let's just say that some things are going to come into a couple of them. You know, it's going to be it's going to be discomfort. It's going to be freedom to express normal behavior, and it's going to be freedom from fear and distress.
Yeah, it's going to fit into all of them.
Some are going to fit into more than one.
Look at your chihuahua's life. Is your chihuahua content? You'll know if they're not, won't you?
Now we're talking about body language, Kate.
Yeah, I know.
Which is another big thing. This may turn into a 3-hour episode.
Yeah, it might do.
So what I would say is, should we talk about, you did mention at the beginning, you did mention plugins. Right, let's just go there and talk about air fresheners and your dog's sense of smell, I guess, and how that would impact the comfort level. Yeah. Dogs see the world with their nose, right? In Jack's episode, we've got an amazing episode with Jack Fenton, which is a few episodes down the line, but he was talking about nose work with chihuahuas. So how dogs see the world. It's a really, really interesting episode. And it just highlights the fact that dogs' noses are really underrated and how powerful they are. So dogs see the world with their nose, like we see the world with our eyes. If you are using any kind of air freshener, any chemical in the environment, that is really potentially is going to affect your chihuahua quite significantly. Their noses are so powerful that it's almost like the equivalent. If you put like an air freshener in the same room as your dog, it's the equivalent almost, I would say, for us, of being in a very, very, very bright room that you can't escape from. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The equivalent of the vision. You can't escape from this brightness. There's light shining in your eyes all the time. And it's really like you can cope with it, but just about, but it's not pleasant. And so for dogs, if they are exposed to constant chemicals in the air that they can smell and they're really sensitive to, that must be quite horrendous for them if they just can't go and they can't leave that house, leave the room.
No, it must be really, really uncomfortable for them.
That might seem extreme, but I reckon that's probably what it's like. When I go into a client's house and I'm not, you know, when I go into a client's house and there is a plug-in, I will usually mention, because we don't use plug-ins or air fresheners in this house because of the dogs, but also because I can't really take that much sort of chemical smell either, and it really gets down my throat. So when I'm not used to it, so when I go into a house with plugins and stuff in, it really, I can really smell it. It kind of hits me. And sometimes there'll be more than one air freshener. There'll be like a plug-in, a diffuser, and then a candle that's been burnt like the night before, and you can still smell that.
I was gonna say, if it's like that for you, imagine what it's like for the dog.
Oh my god, it must be quite horrendous, really. It must be horrible to be in that situation where you can't escape. Yeah,
and it must have a behavioural impact as well if it's really affecting the dog, you know. They're really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's bound to have some sort of impact, isn't it?
Let's think about it. So if someone was shining a bright light in your face all the time, or you were in a very bright room, maybe you wouldn't be able to settle very well. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd be irritated. Maybe your fuse would be quite short. Like, I just can't deal with anything today. I'm overloaded. Yeah. And I think this the scent of these chemicals probably impacts that. What we call trigger stacking in dogs. So I think a lot of dogs are trigger stacked from lots of things, but possibly these air fresheners and the chemicals as well.
Some of the chemicals are toxic to dogs, aren't they? Especially some of the essential oils that you add. So it's not to say that you shouldn't use them, just to be not all of them, but some of them you can get pet safe ones.
You can get pet safe ones. Yeah.
And just be mindful of what it is that you're actually using.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just a lot of people are not aware, and that's what we're trying to highlight here. They're not aware of you know, maybe for me and as professionals, we always look at it through the dog's eyes or the dog's nose. I think it's just being aware there. And a lot of these plugins I've noticed, going back to the plugins, they are set down low.
At dog level.
At dog level. How big are chihuahuas? About 9-10 inches. Where you're plugs on your the other lower plugs where you plug them in your hallway and stuff, they're basically at dog level. So your dog's walking past these plugins or whatever, and they're spewing out the chemicals at their level. So anyway, we're really ranting today about that, but it is important because it's part of the environmental discomfort that possibly some dogs can be exposed to. You don't have to stop using them. We just need to make you aware that it might be affecting your dog. If you have some behavior struggles going on with your chihuahua right now, then you might want to just trial a week of not using air fresheners. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, actually, because I think a lot of people wouldn't even consider that the dogs might be affected by the scents in the house.
I've got a chihuahua client right now, and we turned off the plug-in. And we have I've got a few chihuahua clients actually at the moment, but one of them, we turned off the plug-in. Client was happy to do so, and we'll see what happens. And when I went in the second time, it was, the air was nice and fresh, and
yeah,
you know, it still smelt nice, but it's
not so overpowering. Yeah. Okay. So should we move on to the next freedom?
Yes. Okay, so moving on from the plug-in rant, let's look at our next freedom, and that is freedom from pain, injury, and disease, or disease. Now, obviously, this is an obvious one, but as we know, you know, pain does affect. If we're talking about behavior, pain can affect behavior massively.
The freedom from pain, injury, and disease also, so the domain of that would be health, overall health. And we have discussed how pain can affect behavior in quite a few of our episodes. But one that sticks in my mind is the one with Michael Shikashio, where we discussed aggression and pain, and how a lot of the time what you might see as a dog acting aggressively could be a dog in pain. So it's always important with any behavior, if your dog is displaying a new behavior or what would be considered aggressive behavior, always look at pain first. So has your dog had a pain trial with the vet? You know, has your dog been to the vet to maybe talk about pain? Especially with chihuahuas, you could be looking at things like luxating patella, so they could have pain there. There could be, you know, it can affect the dogs. The same with us. If we're in pain, we can be a bit ratty, can't we?
Yeah,
our dogs can't communicate that to us. So it's important to always consider, is the dog in pain?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really important one, actually. And in Michael Shikashio's episode, this was highlighted. So as Kate says, if you have an aggression issue with your chihuahua, it is really worth going back and listening to that episode with Michael Shikashio again, because there are some really amazing takeaways, but he does highlight the pain thing. But for me who has a neck issue, if that affects my back, if my back's playing up, my behavior changes. And a lot of you listening will resonate with that. If you are feeling under the weather, your behavior will naturally change. Like, I'll be really grouchy, I'll be moving differently, I'll be sighing and huffing and everything, and I'll take some painkillers and, you know, get a heated pad on my back and everything. I sound really old now, I'm not, but have a neck issue which affects my back. And if you have a dog that has a chronic ache or pain that is not, is being kind of undiagnosed, that is going to affect their behavior.
I was gonna say, you probably don't want anyone picking you up either.
Oh my god, no. And of course, being small dog, what do people do? They just grab and pick up, you know, and they just haul the dogs up. Not everyone, of course, but a lot of people just go and grab the dog and pick up. And of course, or even just touch the dog. I saw, kind of filtered into the other two in a minute, but I saw a video, really annoying video the other day of, it was on TikTok, and there was two videos like stitched together. One of them was a man making a funny noise and holding his pit bull. I don't know whether you've seen it, Kate, and him getting his hand and sort of like scruffling the pit bull's chest and going, bah, 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 and, you know, making a funny noise.
Yeah.
And the pit bull's there going, oh, this is nice. And then it cut to a woman trying to do it, like trying to make a point of chihuahuas are aggressive. You can't do that with a chihuahua because you can do it with the pit bull. Holding the chihuahua in the same position and getting a hand, which is obviously bigger to a chihuahua, and really kind of doing this to the, you know, really ruffling the chihuahua's chest and moving the chihuahua around, and the chihuahua went crazy and it bit the woman. And I'm thinking, well, what if that dog had a pain that day?
Yeah.
What if that dog had a sore shoulder that day? It's just like, think about it. You know, would you, if someone did that to me yesterday with my sore back, I would have probably done the same.
Yeah, you would have decked them.
Oh, like decked them. Yeah, like, oh, what are you doing? You need to be thinking about it more than, is my chihuahua going to like this or that? Is my chihuahua in pain? Why are they, there's got to be more to it in terms of why they're acting this way. So it's a really good idea to get your chihuahua checked out the vets.
Because another thing we also like to say is behavior is information.
Oh my God, I've got this written down in my note, right? Yeah. I've got this behavior written down. If you have a notepad and pen, guys, yeah, write this down. Behavior is information. What you do with that information is key. Okay, so behavior is information. That's all it is. There's no right or wrong. It's information. Nice one, Kate.
Yeah, I know. Remember that one. But yeah, behavior is information. And then it's our job as trainers and dog, I don't know if I want to say dog parent, dog guardians to decipher.
You could say dog parents.
Dog guardians to decipher that information. They can't speak to us in words, but they are speaking to us all the time. And it's our job to listen.
Yeah. What can I do with that information? Does that mean I need to take my dog to the vet to get checked out? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that I need to read up on body language or whatever? You know, what is happening here? It's information. Yeah, it's really important.
And then that actually leads us nicely on to freedom to express normal behavior.
Oh, my goodness. This is a big one.
Yeah, so this is number four, isn't it? Freedom to express
number
normal
four.
Behaviors.
Yeah, let's talk about what the normal dog behaviors is.
Yeah, because what is that? What is normal dog behavior? What might be normal for one dog might not be normal for another dog. Because that's another thing we haven't actually said is all dogs are individuals.
Probably a whole different episode. Yeah, all dogs are individuals. But in general, you are going to see kind of patterns, aren't you?
Yeah, and you're going to learn what's normal for your dog as well.
And different breeds. And of course, we're talking about chihuahuas. So there are things that a chihuahua might do that are like German Shepherd might not do, or vice versa. So, but in general, they do the same kind of things. So, should we talk about what's normal dog behavior? Because I've got two really important ones.
Do you want to go with your two important ones?
I would say sniffing is a big one. Like going back to dogs see the world with their noses. So sniffing is a really, really big one for your dogs. Dogs, they need to sniff. Like, I don't know about you, Kate, I see this quite a lot, but I'll be watching somebody walk their dog down the road and every time the dog stops to sniff, they'll pull the dog away. Like they'll be marching down the road, not allowing their dog to sniff what they need to. And like I said, you know, dogs see the world with their noses. And if you are pulling your chihuahua away from sniffs on a walk, that's almost a bit like blindfolding them. If they were human, they wouldn't be able to see much. So sniffing is really important. They find it incredibly enriching. It's how they process the environment around them. And it's a need that must be met.
It is. I like to think of it as reading their P-mail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they find out a lot about other dogs through sniffing as well, don't they?
Yeah, they can tell, like, their age, their health.
What they had for breakfast yesterday.
Yeah, what they had for breakfast. Yeah, it's like reading their penile. Like those videos that I've sent you about my chihuahuas in the wild, of them just exhibiting natural dog behaviour.
Oh, my God.
Posted.
Right. Let's talk about chihuahuas in the wild. Kate lives in the wilds of Scotland.
It's true.
It looks absolutely beautiful. And, oh, there's that forest walk that you have near you. That forest. She's got a walk she does with her chihuahuas. Sorry, I'm just speaking for you now. That walk you do with your chihuahuas, that starts in the forest, is that right? And then slowly goes down to the beach. Like, the path gets sandier and sandier, and it goes through the, and then you've got this like lovely beach. I'm so envious.
Amazing.
So jealous.
You have to come and visit.
I will. But oh my God, that sounds amazing. So Kate will send me videos, and you'll probably see it on Carry On Canine, her Facebook page anyway. But she'll post videos of her chihuahuas literally in the wilds of Scotland, in like a big pine forest or the beach. And it's like, there's just no one else around. And these chihuahuas are living their best life up in Scotland.
They are. So what I often do on those walks is I'll just sit somewhere, like sit on a rock or something, and I'll let the dogs just go off and do natural dog behavior, which you see them just walking around sniffing. They're not paying attention to me. I mean, they would if I called them, but I don't do that because I want them to exhibit natural dog behavior. And they're just wandering about, aren't they, sniffing?
Yeah, and they're lovely videos, because it's like, literally, it's like chihuahuas in the wild.
Yeah.
They're just expressing natural behaviors. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of sniffing going on.
And I think that's so important for them as well. Well, it is. Yeah. It is a fact that it's really important for them. It's good for their mental well-being.
We have to look after our mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Dogs are the same. We need to help them with their mental health as well. And sniffing is a big, big part of that. Talking about chihuahuas in the wild, the opposite of that is having a garden that, I'm going to talk about fake grass, with fake grass in it. Because some people don't get their chihuahuas out enough for walks. And that's just various reasons. And we're not judging or anything. But then what they'll have is they'll maybe have fake grass in the garden. And I don't get that. I don't understand what fake grass is all about. It is. So already we've annoyed people that have plugins and then have fake grass. But it needs to be said, if you have a dog, I personally, don't shoot me down, I don't think you should be having fake grass unless there's a very, very good reason.
I can't think what that reason would be.
No, we have patio in our garden, and there is a little wildlife garden, so the dogs aren't really allowed. Well, they're allowed on it, but they do have the patio. However, every day I'll take them for two walks a day, and I'll always make sure they get to go on grass. So they'll do a lot of sniffing on their walks. And if they're having, like, if I'm really busy and they are going around the block, I'm taking them like around the block, because they're only tiny dogs, they're going around the block, we'll make sure it's quite leafy where we are, and there's lots of grass patches. So I'll make sure that we'll go from grass patch to grass patch to grass patch, and they can do their natural doggy behaviors that they need to do on those grass patches where there's trees, there's leaves, there's grass. They can sniff, they can go to toilet, they can roll on the grass if they need to. I'll just make sure that they go there rather than just pounding the pavements. I think it's really, really important. And I do feel sorry for dogs when they only have fake grass. Well, it's not really grass, is it? It's like plastic. So toilet on, or to, you know, to be around when they've got a garden there.
I don't think there's anything wrong with having fake grass if your dog has got other outlets.
Yeah.
You know?
No, because that's absolutely fine.
Because some people might be in apartments and they just have a balcony with a bit of fake grass outside, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not that there's anything wrong with having it. It's just if that your chihuahua's only life, because, you know, we know of circumstances, don't we, where the dogs aren't walked at all and their only outside space is either concrete or fake grass. And
yeah,
from the dog's point of view, that's not very enriching, is it?
No.
You know, just having that
Yeah, if you're only going out for walks, if you're not going out for walks and you've only got patio, concrete, fake grass, that's no life for a dog.
No.
That's harsh, but it's true.
And that actually would be one of the circumstances where we'd say the dog's needs aren't being met.
That's a perfect example.
You're not allowing them to express their natural behavior if their only outside time is just in a bit of concrete or with, that's what we say. We're not saying that fake grass is necessarily bad. It's just if that's your dog's only outside access to.
Yes, you know, exactly.
That's not providing enrichment for your dog. We've gone off on a tangent.
We have gone off.
Normal behavior.
We have. So that was sniffing.
Sniffing is normal behavior.
Yeah. The other thing for me is growling.
Growling is normal behavior.
Growling, yeah. So a lot of people are still
very
so when
offended.
A dog a lot of people are offended by growling, and I think I was probably the same before I understood a bit more about dog behavior. And I read an amazing book called The Culture Clash by Jean Donaldson back in the day. And that's it. If you ever get the chance, guys, and this is if you ever get a chance to read this book, it's amazing. It really changed my viewpoint on dogs and what they need from us and their behavior. It's called The Culture Clash by Jean Donaldson.
But it's communication, and communication is also normal dog behavior.
Yeah, growling is simply communication. And it, like I said, you know, behavior is information. So if your chihuahua is growling, that's behavior that requires you to think, that's information that I need to work with. What does that dog need from me right now? A growl is usually defense. It's not offensive, it's usually defensive. So it's to gain space from that potentially scary or annoying thing. So it's to warn you politely to back away. But growling is a normal behavior among, if my dogs growl at each other, I'm not going to tell them off or, you know, sort of think that's, oh my God, they growled at each other, because they're usually pretty good. And a low growl will mean, oh, you're too close to me. It's quite polite communication. So I'll just let that go and that's fine. My chihuahua the other day, I thought, and you know, those of you who know Bo, she's come to me with quite a lot of baggage. So I've had to work through a lot of things with her, a lot of issues with her. But I went to pick her up yesterday. I went to pick up and she did a very, very, very light, low growl. And you could barely hear it, but I could sort of feel the vibration. My hands went off straight away. I was like, oh, sorry. And I moved away. Because if I'd picked her up and ignored that growl, I probably would have been bitten. And that's not because she's being mean or bad or she's being misbehaving or a diva. It means that she doesn't want me to do that thing. And I'm going to respect that.
And that's actually a good point that you mentioned there about the dogs growling at each other. My dogs growl at each other, you know. It's as long as it's not escalating and becoming an issue within the household, dogs growling at each other is completely normal behavior.
It's actually, a growling is a conflict avoiding behavior, isn't it? It keeps the peace. It's better than fighting.
Yeah. They're just saying, hey, you go away. This is my space.
Growling kind of like within reason, but growling in a multi-dog household with other dogs and more than one dog to, you know, between each other. So growling amongst dogs regulates the social structure, it regulates everything, it keeps everyone happy, as it were, keeps everyone on board, playing the game, playing by the rules, as it were.
So freedom to express normal behavior should include freedom to communicate, freedom to express normal body language. But within communication includes barking.
Yeah.
Which,
hands up, who has lots of barking?
Yeah, the Chihuahua podcast. We all know that chihuahuas are known for barking, which
barking
can,
behavior.
Barking is a completely normal behavior and it is a form of communication. I'm not saying that we all want our dogs to be barking their heads off at all hours of the day and night, but some barking is normal and it can be lessened, can't it? You know, we've both got dogs present while we're recording this podcast and we don't have barking dogs.
No, my dogs are downstairs, but they're not barking right now. Mm-hmm. But if someone walked past the window or somebody knocked on the door, they probably would bark.
Yep, mine
and
was
that's
as well.
pretty normal alert barking. But dogs have evolved to, like, we don't see wolves barking, do we?
No, it's a dog specific thing,
We've
isn't it?
kind of bred them to bark, would you say? Like,
We
within
have.
reason. Yeah.
Yeah, we have bred them to
It's
bark.
a, yeah. Dogs don't bark amongst themselves to communicate. That's where the low growling and the mostly body language comes into play.
Yeah.
So it's normal for us to expect dogs to bark because we've kind of bred that, especially with the Chihuahuas, like they're little watchdogs. And so we have
Hello,
bred
barking.
we have brought that into them. So if you're going to make your bed, you've got to lie in it.
Yeah. It's not to say, though, that you have to live with constant Chihuahua barking, though, is it? Like, we've worked with all of the behaviours. Mm-hmm. It's important that they can express normal dog behaviour. And if it's a if it's becoming a problem, then there's things that you can do to address those things.
We're talking about excessive barking, aren't we? We're talking about excessive barking. So you have to expect some barking. So expect some barking. But if it becomes excessive, there may be possibly a need not being met there.
Yes, possibly.
So it may be one of the other freedoms or domains.
Yeah, that's not being addressed.
Not being addressed.
And the other thing as well that gets me is, it's unrealistic to expect certain dog breeds to not bark at all. So be mindful of the dog breed that you choose if you want a quiet dog.
I have a lot of things to say about this. I do have a lot of things to say about this. We need to get better at lots of things, but one of the things we need to get better at is we need to get better at researching the breed. We need to get better at researching the breed that is suitable for us.
What's the normal dog behavior? Playing, digging. Yeah, so digging, normal dog behavior.
Do your dogs dig? Because mine have never really digged.
My terrier does. The Chihuahuas aren't so big on digging. Oh, except Caspi. He's decided he likes digging on the beach. It's really cute. I dig with him, but he only does it on the beach.
Now, my Chihuahua has never dug. The only thing she does dig a little bit, is she's not really digging, but she's just making a little nest, is that she'll dig in her bedding. And she has like fleece bedding. And so sometimes it's that real, it's not fleece. But yeah, it's fleece, like that vet bed type stuff on some of her beds. When she's digging to make, and this isn't digging because it's fun, she's digging because it's like a motor pattern, she's trying to make it comfortable for her to sleep.
Yes.
When she's digging, she will bring up some fluff and the fluff will come off, but I'm not, because it's a natural normal behavior, I'm not going to suddenly go, oi, stop that digging, because of the fluff that she's producing. I'm going to let that go.
Yeah.
Right. So the digging that I see that she does, I think, well, that's normal dog behavior. She's not even thinking about it. It's just like she's going through the motions. It's like instinctual. So she's digging, then she'll just settle down. But I think there's probably quite a few people out there that would see that as being naughty, potentially.
Yeah. Destructive.
Destructive. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's completely normal behavior. Same with caching as well. You know, when they cache their food and bury it with their nose. I'm like doing the actions even though no one can see me. But yeah, if you've got a dog, you've seen them do this where they nose their food to bury it. Very normal behavior. It only becomes a problem, doesn't it, when it becomes excessive or like OCD fixated behavior. That's only when it's an issue.
Yeah. I was actually with a client last week. I can't remember who it was now, but they were saying about, oh, and they take a chew and they'll dig it. They'll sort of dig a hole, put it in, then dig it back up again. Oh, it's really annoying. And they'll bring the chew inside. There's mud everywhere. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, it's a bit annoying, but there's nothing I can do about that, because that's just, unless it's really excessive, like you say, that's pretty normal dog behavior, you know?
Yeah. And there's things that you can do. So if you have got a dog that's a digger, you can provide them with a dig area, you know, to stop them from digging up. you know, there's things that you can do to allow them to exhibit natural behavior in a way that's convenient for you as well, so it works for both of you.
You can actually provide a digging pit, can't you? And we can like hide toys in there and chews and biscuit treats and stuff like that, so our dogs have a job to do and to something, you know, to dig something up.
Again, that's a very individual thing, isn't it? Well, all dogs are individuals, but you're going to have some dogs that are more into digging, some dogs not bothered. Like Chloe, she's not bothered about digging. She's got better things to do with
it. Mine aren't really that bothered. Well, you know, Kira's now 14, but Bo's never been a digger. The only thing she does dig, like I say, is her bed.
You know, another thing that's normal dog behavior.
Yeah.
Is territorial behavior.
When people are visiting other people's houses and they take the dogs to that other house and as an existing dog in that house, I find quite a few people expect those dogs to get on, or they've previously met on neutral ground and they are surprised when those dogs then don't get on inside the house for whatever reason. Usually it's because the existing dog is being territorial over their territory.
Yeah.
Over their space.
Makes sense.
Which makes perfect sense.
That's a really good example as well, actually. That the dog that, so the home-based dog that's on its territory, it's not being unreasonable to be territorial towards the other dog. And I'm not saying that there's not stuff that you can't do to make that better, but just to maybe look at it from that dog's point of view, that it is not being naughty, it's not being unreasonable, it's just exhibiting normal dog behavior. You know, there's things we can do to help the situation, to make it not feel the need to express it so much, but just to be aware that that is normal dog behavior.
Yes. One thing though, I want to just say about when I'm visiting people, going back to the sniffing and the playing thing and the you know, dogs expressing natural normal behaviors, just one thing about that. When I go into a client's house and I do sit down, and I have like a kit bag. Sometimes I'll have a tub full of stuff, which is over there. But sometimes I'll take like a little capsule kit and it'll be in my kit bag. What I'll do is I want the dog to sniff me to gather the information they need from me and to process. So what I'll do usually, if I haven't met the dog before or slightly nervous dog, I'll put the bag in front of me or to the side, so that's the first thing they can see and they can sniff that before they can sniff me. And usually I'll take the treats out of that bag but leave some toys on the top, because I want to see whether the dog is going to take the toys.
Yeah.
And so I'll always tell the owner or suggest that they leave the dog, if the dog sniffs my bag, puts its head in my bag, you know, whatever it does, climbs on my bag, leave it, don't say anything, I just want to observe. And more often than not, the owners will still really get embarrassed when the dog puts its head in my bag and takes a toy out. For me, I'm like, oh my god, that's amazing, really. That's what I want them to do, because like that's like, you know, they're confident, they can take the toy, they like the toy, that gives me information, like behaviors information. So that tells me, here's a dog that is actually quite happy about me being here, likes my bag, takes a toy, likes toys. Brilliant. Very often I'll have the owner go, oh, he's taking your toy, I'm so sorry, oh my god, get your head out that bag, Fluffy, get your head, you know, and they'll go crazy with this dog. And I'm like, it's okay, that's what I want to happen. It's normal behavior, and they just can't get it into their heads that that's not naughty or wrong behavior.
No.
But that's what I mean. Yeah.
Exploring their environment, exploration is...
Yeah. I want the dog to stick its head into my kit bag. I want them to gather the information, and I want them then to steal that toy and have a play with it. Well,
yeah,
not steal, find the toy and have a play with it. And then I know what I'm working with, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it gives you an idea of the dog's confidence level as well, where the dog's at emotionally, doesn't it? Because a nervous dog's not going to be doing that.
Absolutely.
At least initially, anyway. What would you say is a common problem that people often think is an unwanted behavior that is actually part of natural behavior?
Dissecting things. One of the things would be ripping stuff up. Ripping toys up, like dissecting toys, paper, cardboard.
Their bed.
Chewing their bed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good
What about
question.
you?
Stealing things.
Which is kind of the same, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Stealing things, finding
Possessing.
things.
Yeah, and possessing the things, which actually is all of that is all part of the predatory motor action, isn't it?
Yes.
Find seeking it, so seeking the object, finding it, possessing it. I can't think
Parading.
of it. Yeah, parading it about.
And then dissection.
Dissection. So,
Which
yeah.
is, I mean, both you and me have terriers. They're big on dissecting. They love to rip
Oh,
stuff up.
yeah.
And many chihuahuas do as well.
Caspi is big on it as well.
The one thing, the most, there's three, that when I go into a puppy client's, a puppy session now, I will always give them my three mistakes to avoid, like puppy mistakes to avoid, like three big tips before I do anything else. And usually if we cover these three tips, we're golden for that session. And my number one is, if your puppy picks something up in its mouth, do not chase it.
No.
Run the other way. Unless it's, and even so, you know, I do this a different way, but if, even if it's like, but if it's got something like a knife or like a pen knife or something that's going to really injure itself, or like when there's washing powder, washing liquid pouches, yeah, you know, get the thing off the puppy. But if it's like a tissue, a sweet wrapper or anything, or your sock, just don't panic, but do not chase that dog or chase that puppy.
No, because it's exhibiting normal behavior. But I don't want our listeners to think I'm just like, oh, she just lets the dogs just run wild. They're basically feral.
No, no, no. Our dogs are not feral.
Not what I'm saying
like,
anyway.
First of all, we don't chase, but then we would do something else. Well, first of all, we probably make sure that the puppy couldn't access those things in the first place. So we prevent. But then we can teach them to swap or go the other way and go pop, 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 you know, and go to the fridge or go and get another toy or something, and just really make yourself a lot more interesting and exciting.
Because what we don't want to happen is we don't want the dog to start grabbing things and then feeling the need to run off and hide them. And knowing that once it's gone object, you're suddenly really terrifying. So the next thing the dog's going to do is turn into a resource guarder and start guarding the object. So that's what we're trying to prevent there.
We're trying to prevent that. Yeah. I think the biggest reason why people do have resource guarding issues is what they've done with that puppy early on. I sound like I'm really like judging there, but I think that's one of the main, a really common reason. So picking stuff up in their mouths, parading around with something and dissecting, is that normal behavior? And for me, if I had a puppy now and they found a tissue, they ran around with it, paraded it, and say, oh, look what I've got. This is nice, isn't it? Yeah. And then decided to chew it up, not eat it, but spit it out. I would leave them to do that. I would leave them be completely and just go, get on with it. That's fine. Have a nice time.
Yeah. But I think what's important as well for our listeners is that they learn normal dog behavior, and then you can give them an outlet for that normal dog behavior that's not them running feral. So,
yeah.
You know, if you've got a dog that is dissecting things, you can give them something that they can dissect, like a cardboard box, or you can stuff something that they're allowed to dissect, which is going to make them less likely to just do it in random things.
I saw a great toy yesterday.
Oh, did you?
A couple of days ago. It's like the holy roller things, rubber. It's like a rubber ball with lots of holes in it. So it's not a ball anymore. It's like a big rubber thing that you can stuff. It's like got space in the middle. And they've made a toy that is a holy roller, but then they've rolled up little fleece pieces. So you can unravel these fleece pieces and stick a little treat inside, so the dog can actually spend time. It's for dogs that like to dissect. Dog can spend time just pulling out fleece, unraveling it, and eating the treat.
Oh, that's really good. I think I've seen that actually. I thought about getting it for mine because Casper's a big dissector.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's dissected all these fluffy toys. I just restuff them and then he dissects them again. But, you know,
I restuff them. And many people actually say, well, he doesn't have soft toys because he chews them up. I'm like, well, that's what he's supposed to kind of do in a way. I used to go to the charity shop for Kira when she was younger and get like 50p toys. But there was, make sure that they were dog safe. And they didn't have those beans inside. It was just fluff. And just literally like get 6 or 7 and just sort of like chuck them all in the room. And she used to go from one to the other, shaking it like they were little rats.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually, it brings it round to the whole why it's important for people to recognize natural dog behavior, because then they can do things that adapt, you know, natural dog behavior that's not causing a problem within the house. Because if people aren't aware of things that are natural dog behavior, what they end up doing is shutting that behavior down, and it comes out all over the place in different areas, and then we'll come in and say the dog's needs aren't being met.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And you know what? Sometimes you might not even need to enlist the help of a behaviorist or trainer if you are covering all your dog's needs and meeting those needs. It is really, really important. So many of the Chihuahuas that I see, or because I run a Chihuahua training help and advice on Facebook, it's a free group, and of course I see a lot of Chihuahua clients, and Kate does as well, and many of the Chihuahuas that I see are excessively and doing a normal behavior, which is excessively barking. But I can guarantee you many of these dogs, their needs aren't being completely met. So usually when we're seeing a dog with behavior issues, there is a deficit somewhere along the line, isn't there? There's some need that's not being completely, that's not being met. Either it's physical exercise, mental enrichment and training, or a clear lack of rules and boundaries, but that's another thing. But a lot of these dogs are bored, they're frustrated, or they are not allowed enough choice in their own bodies as well, and not sort of given that choice, and or sort of not allowed to get away from things that may frighten them. If you have a Chihuahua that is displaying some unwanted behavior, then first of all, we need to really deep dive into what they're possibly lacking or what we can change. And we need to make sure that they are allowed to be a dog. And I know it's hard because they're such a small, tiny breed, and we assume that they are lap dogs, they are lap dogs, but they are a toy breed, then we think maybe they don't need as much physical exercise or mental enrichment or training than a larger breed, say a German Shepherd or a Labrador. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they do, because they're small. I mean, they are very, very quick-witted, quick-moving, energetic, intelligent dogs, aren't they?
And I think partly that comes down because they're so tiny, people don't do the training with them so much, because you don't need to do as much training with a Chihuahua because you can physically handle them more than you can like a larger dog. But you should be doing the same things that you would do with a larger dog with a smaller dog.
And the fact that we can move them from place to place is another reason why freedom number 5 is really, really important, which is freedom from
fear and distress. And the domain for that is the mental state and experiences.
So this kind of goes back to that video I was talking about just a while ago, about the video with the lady holding the Chihuahua and putting a hand and ruffling the Chihuahua's chest and making a funny noise and stuff, and the Chihuahua was reacting by snapping and biting at her. And what she's doing there is she's going against that fifth freedom, isn't she?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, she's not taking into consideration that the dog's emotional state. And I think that gets so often overlooked, is the dog's emotional state.
This is a massive issue. And like I said, you know, we need to be better at also and recognizing when our dogs are feeling anxious and scared, and then acting accordingly on that. I was watching another video. I don't just scroll social media, I promise you. I was watching a video this morning, actually. I can't remember where it was, but it was a compilation of baseball games. And I haven't told you this, have I? And the baseball game has a feature halfway through the game. And I don't know anything about baseball. And apparently people do take their dogs to baseball games. So
yeah,
that's the first thing. So people in America do take their dogs to baseball games, big stadiums. I'm not talking about local, I'm talking about big stadium games. And there's a feature on there called the Simba cam. So holding his little baby Simba up to the sky like that. And they want them to do that with their dogs at these baseball games. And what happens is they do that and they hold the dog up to the sky.
That's horrible.
And the camera pans and they get their dog on the picture on this big screen. And everyone goes, yay, that's amazing. Oh, look, it's so cute.
Poor dog.
I was looking at all these compilations and every single dog was distressed or scared. There was which was a little terrier, had its tail. I mean, bearing in mind, these people are up high anyway, like sitting in a stadium, watching the game from up high. Then you're suddenly all hoist up into the air. And the terrier had its tail tucked right under, closed mouth, ears back, like, what the hell's going on? One had his little dog holding it. So the dog was on its back, like a little sausage dog on its back like this, right above his head. And then the woman next to him on the same shot was holding a dog up and the dog was writhing around like, get me down. And there was a beagle that was climbing on this man because he didn't want to do it. And I was just thinking, why are you doing that to your dog? Where's this fifth freedom here?
I know.
In that situation.
It wouldn't have even crossed their minds.
I know.
Their dog's emotional state.
This is the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah.
We need to be better.
Putting ourselves in our dog's shoes, like, how would we feel in that situation?
Freedom from fear and distress. Those dogs are fearful and they're distressed, and that owner's putting them in that situation. The owner's doing it to them right there and then. I mean, and you know, these dogs are obviously well cared for. One of the dogs I was looking at had, like, you know, like dyed ears, like little pink ears and lovely grooming and everything. And that doesn't make any difference when you're holding your dog up to the sky and it's scared to death.
No, it doesn't.
Who cares about that?
It's just like,
when you're doing that to your dog.
And I'm sure a lot of the people, if you said to them, you're causing your dog great distress by doing this to the dog, and pointed out the body language that you can see, they would probably, some of them, or maybe a lot of them, would be really, you know, distraught to know that
they probably would.
It's just that they haven't even, it's not something that's crossed their mind,
but
I think.
It's like the ignorance, I guess, or the misunderstanding, or that, like, dogs have emotions and these emotions don't just switch on and off. It's constant. It's like us, you know, I can go from a bit irritated now to, like, hungry or happy. No, what am I talking about? Happy to hungry.
I know what you
irritated
mean.
To hungry.
All the range of emotions.
All everything. I express everything. I can go from sad to happy in 5 minutes. No. What I mean is, like, just because a dog's sitting there or looking a certain way, it's feeling something.
Definitely.
You know, it's feeling an emotion.
An
emotion going on all the time. It's not a fluffy toy that you can just, like, do a Simba move when you feel like it and not expect the dog to feel anything or react to that.
I know.
Emotionally.
People just need to, like, think about, how would I feel if that was me? Maybe a little bit more. And that would, they'd have a better relationship with their dog and a better understanding of their dog as well. You know, like, if I was this tiny and I lived in a giant world, people kept doing things to me, how would I feel about that?
100%. Yeah. and we've got to remember that dogs are learning all the time, aren't they? So freedom away from feeling fearful and just, you know, distressed. It's a basic need. It's a basic requirement for you as an owner, for the listeners, to understand this and recognize when your dog is feeling fearful or distressed, and then act accordingly. We're a nation of dog lovers, aren't we? Yet we don't know sometimes when our dogs need help or are asking for help.
Very well said.
There's actually a report out a few weeks ago. Did you see this? It's actually a study that found that, I think it was 8 or 9 out of 10 people who owned a dog couldn't read when their dog was fearful or stressed.
Yeah, I did see something about that.
It was something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, people were talking about that there should be a, like, a a doggy theory license.
A theory test,
yeah, for dog owners. Yeah, that's what, wasn't that connected to that?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was. But yeah, you need to have a and that's for us. I mean, for me, that's a basic understanding of dogs, is that, you know, you need to be able to read a few stress signals to understand what that means and understand what your dog is trying to say. And I think that's a good idea for, if you want a dog, let's take a theory test to prove that you can actually understand a dog and obviously care for that dog before you get it.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. Might be controversial, but I just think it just makes sense, doesn't it? It's common sense, because our chihuahuas are much more than cute little fluffy beings.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
They're emotional little creatures.
And some chihuahuas are very emotional little creatures.
They are.
They're sensitive. Small dogs
with very big feelings. So it's important that we can recognize those feelings. The only thing I would like to add is that the freedom from fear and distress should also include not using aversive methods with your chihuahua. So not using things like spray bottles, shake cans, anything that causes them to be fearful.
Really good point.
Or distressed. You're not achieving anything by spraying your chihuahua in the face, except maybe they learn that you're not very trustworthy. Might stop that behavior in the moment, but really you want to look at the root cause rather than just spraying them in the face. The same with shake cans. Anything that causes a dog to startle is not what you want.
Yeah, it seems a lot of advice out there, especially for small dogs, usually it's something to do with barking, isn't it?
Mm.
Barking or growling or biting or something like that. It's to use startle tactics for them. Clapping hands, like clap your hands, or whack a newspaper against the wall, or like, you know, the pebble cans you shake to startle, or the, like you say, squirting water. There's a lot of startle tactics that's always, like for small dogs, always used or recommended.
So we covered a lot there.
Covered a lot of information.
We have. We've given you a little bit of an insight into the five freedoms. We've covered what they are. Hopefully we've given you an idea of what normal dog behavior is, so you can look at your dog in a new light now and think, oh, is this what's going on here? Is this perhaps normal dog behavior? Maybe I need to give my dog an outlet for that.
Yep.
I will put some links in the show notes. So if you want to go and find out more about the five freedoms and meeting your dog's needs, the links will be there. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode. If there's anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to hear us talk more about, or if you have any questions, you can send us a message.
To join the conversation, please reach out to us on the Facebook page, the Chihuahua Podcast. We would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. And we will see you next time with a very special guest.
Oh yes, a very special guest. But also in the meantime, don't forget to like, follow and subscribe to us wherever you listen to our podcast, because it does really help our overall podcast rating. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye.